You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, it looks like former Secretary of State John Kerry is back in the news again, if it isn't the ridiculousness of his stances on climate control and his large carbon footprint. Now we go back to subterfuge and collusion with the Iranian government.
Well, that's what it seems like. It seems like during his deployment with the Obama administration,
As Secretary of State,
he told the Iranian government about over 200 Israeli ops that were happening around the country.
Yeah, covert ops. And so the question is, and by the way, this is coming to light now after the New York Times, failed to report this story or buried the story. But during the time he was Secretary of State, of course, we continued to have our military operations along with the Israelis against the Islamists, radicals, and militants, and ISIS in Syria. And of course, these incursions threatened the entire Middle East. Not only did it decimate Syria, but it interferes with everything that all the surrounding nations were involved, the stability of those nations, and ultimately affects the safety and security of the United States, including our military operations. So the question would be, not only did he compromise, if this is correct, and an investigation definitely needs to take place. I don't know how it's going to take place during a Biden administration, but if there is an investigation, we need to find out who, what, where, when, and how.
Well, and I hope they have an investigation, because Iranian foreign minister, his name is Mohammad Javad Zarif, he said that while Kerry served as America's top diplomat under Obama, that he discussed over 200 operations that Israel had carried out in Syria against Iranian targets. He said himself that he was absolutely shocked that Kerry revealed that information.
And so how did the information get revealed? I believe it was a leaked audio interview with a reporter at the time.
So, yes.
You know, here's some of the things that people need to know about John Kerry and Mohammad Zarif, the foreign minister of our enemy, Iran. And that is that they've known each other for many years. I think they knew each other before the Obama administration. They've been friends for over 12 years. And so that friendship carries on. And of course, Kerry was appointed by President Biden as the climate czar, which is a cabinet level position, but he's bringing them back into Iran to further discuss the Iranian United States European nuclear deal.
Yes, and they say that this conversation may damage that discussion. What I wonder, and what all Americans should wonder, is why John Kerry, who was not a diplomat under the Trump administration, was going over to Iran and having discussions with them during the Trump administration. Doesn't that seem odd to you?
Well, first of all, we shouldn't have let that happen, because Iran, I believe, under the Trump administration, was one of those countries that was off limits for visitation without special permission. So you had to get special permission from the State Department to visit any of these countries that sponsored terrorism. For instance, you just can't go to Cuba. You have to, without permission from the State Department. What people do when they go to Cuba is they go through Canada, and then from Canada or another country like Mexico, then they transit. So they can only get to one of those countries by transiting through a country that doesn't have those restrictions on travel to go to a terrorist-backed country.
Yeah, I just see that as being something that is so unethical that John Kerry did in both instances, Ron. In the instance of revealing the Israeli operations in Syria to Zarif, but also in going back to Iran during the Trump administration, I think that that just was totally improper. And now he's back as this climate czar, and he's running all over the world on climate, which is a whole nother subject and farce.
Yeah, but Biden is still, and the State Department are still going to allow him to be part of these negotiations again with the nuclear deal, because he was the Secretary of State at the time, so he has that collective knowledge. But people need to remember that this is the same John Kerry that was Secretary of State under the Obama-Biden administration, which covertly gave the Iranians $155 billion in cash in unmarked planes, either by the State Department or the military, unmarked planes on pallets. So negotiable United States currency, cash United States dollars, $155 billion. And then once they were discovered, they said it was to, it was to assuage the Iranians to get them to negotiate for the release of United States hostages. I think there were three or four hostages at the time. You don't negotiate with terrorists. The United States does not negotiate with terrorists. And they did that under their administration. Where do you think that $155 billion went?
Well, they freely say where it went. It went to, especially to their nuclear programs, and which they are enriching now up to 60%. They're getting closer and closer to have weapons grade uranium, but it also went to arms and things like that.
For terrorists.
Exactly, for terrorists. It did not go for food for their people. It did not go for infrastructure. It did
medical
not go
supplies,
to fix their airplanes.
Right.
No,
exactly.
It did not. And pretty much from what I understand, they've spent that money.
Oh, no, that money is all gone. So please don't forget who John Kerry is. Let's go back 50 years to the Vietnam War. So John Kerry was in the Navy at the time. I think he was a first lieutenant in the Navy. And don't forget how he sold the American military down the tubes as a whistleblower, and especially with regard to the Navy. Don't forget, and you should Google it, don't forget the entire Swift boat boondoggle, right? And how people in his own detachment, naval detachment of Swift boats, when he was running before, I think he ran for president of the United States at one point, look how those people came out in mask. His own colleagues in the Navy came out against him and basically called him a coward and a traitor.
Yeah, and I think he received a Purple Star, didn't he? And they said that his wound was something like Band-Aid worthy. It wasn't, he wasn't wounded like you would think somebody would be wounded for a Purple Star.
Well, Linda, and here's where Dr. Ron needs to correct you on your military.
Oh, it's not a Purple Star?
No, honey, it's a Purple Heart.
Oh, Purple Heart. I'm sorry. Yes. Well, never having been in the military, I defer to you.
But our friends and listeners get your point. Okay. So anyway, so that's John Kerry. And, you know, while we're on the subject of politicians and problems that these reckless politicians and do-nothing politicians are creating for our country, let's talk about Vice President Kamala Harris. And she's supposed to be the border czar. She's the person supposed to be in charge. And boy, they backtracked on that story of the border. Let's talk about her.
Well, you know, speaking of backtracking on that, you know, when Biden announced that at his first press conference, where he had the pictures and the names of all the people and the questions they would ask so that he could know who he was going to call on, you know, he announced that she was going to be in charge of the border. And I don't think she even knew about that. I think he just threw that out there and then they kind of made a plan and nobody knew what the plan was. And now we're, you know, well past that day and she's never been to the border, never had a a press conference
34
about it.
Days. 34 days as president of the vice president of the United States.
So anyway, it's been quite a while, and nothing from her. Just nothing is being done. And now she basically says, "Well, you know, I'm not going to the border. I'm going to work with the places that are sending people to the border and see why they're sending them and see what we can do there." No, you've got to stop the bleeding first before you can find out and do surgery on the wound or the infection, whatever. You've got to stop the bleeding. And that's what's happening right now. We are absolutely contaminated with people running over our border every single day, and people that are not the best of the best. They are not the quality of people that we want. And not that the people, so people don't get all excitable, are not quality people. They are unskilled. They have no language skills. They have no money. They have nowhere to go. And they are just filtering in. And speaking of that, they have caught so many sexual predators coming over the border. They've caught MS-13. They've caught people on the terrorist watch list. These are not your best citizens. And I'll tell you what, the best citizens want to stay in Mexico. They have a good life where they are. They have jobs. They do fine. And that is not who's running over this border.
Well, let's talk about a couple of things. And number one is, I absolutely agree with you. So you got to stop the bleeding, and then you get to surgery. And how we stop the bleeding is we stop these ridiculous executive orders and these directives by President Biden. Okay, that's what we do. We stop that. You know, it's interesting to know that so far, President Biden has made over 90 executive orders and directives to Department of Homeland Security, Border Patrol, ICE, anybody that is in charge with the safety and security of our border and our immigration process. He's done over 90. That is three times the amount of executive orders and directives that President Trump had. And he did exactly what you're talking about, Linda. When we had President Trump in office, he stopped the bleeding, and then he went right to surgery. And he was a very skilled surgeon with regards to his policies, because it almost overnight, and the guy that's the head, I don't remember his name, but the guy that is the head of the Border Patrol Officers Association, I think he represents over 30,000 Border Patrol and ICE agents. He said when Trump took over, it was like a light switch. And he said, you can turn it on and turn it off. And the most important thing to do is get rid of the catch and release policy and return people back to Mexico immediately, pending any adjudication of their application to come into the United States, right? You need to do that. Then what did he do? That from day one, he started building the border wall, which now is languishing. So everything that the Biden administration has done has created just complete chaos and has harmed far more people than have helped.
There are already stories coming out about people coming over the border and that are already causing harm to people. So they, especially child predation, there has been a lot of cases of people that are raping, you know, our kids.
Okay? We see that in Texas right now.
Our American kids. And we see things like drunk driving, people getting killed from drunk drivers, just a variety of different crimes that are happening now. And the poor people on the border, they have these people that are coming on their land and stealing their things and, you know, kind of just squatting on their land.
Well, and people need to remember, and I think you can see this on television every single day, when the people are coming across, they're muling drugs. And then also the drug smugglers come across the border in the poorest areas where there was mitigation before, right?
Right.
It was harder to bring drugs into the United States. Now there is a free flow of all these dangerous drugs, the fentanyl, the cocaine, the methamphetamine that feeds the drug habits of people in the United States, of which I think the American public needs to be reminded from time to time that we lose over 110,000 people a year, 110,000 people a year to drug overdoses, okay, because of all the plentiful drugs that are available. And then what do the politicians do, Linda? Instead of stopping the flow of drugs at the border, instead of having harsh penalties and more drug task forces to fight drug dealing, because drug use is basically, I look at it as a mental health issue, but it's a safety and security issue. What do? They legislate in certain cities drug-free zones, meaning not that they're free of drugs, but you are free to use drugs. You are injection zones. Okay, that didn't work in Europe. Didn't work there. And it's not going to work in the United States. It's going to kill more people.
Well, and the problems are just getting worse. And you have to remember that what's happening on the southern border, Ron, is purposefully done. It is not an accident. It is not something that they are ignoring unwillfully. They're willfully ignoring the border issue that Kamala Harris is doing and that President Biden is doing, with all of these excuses of why they're ignoring it and saying they have to do this and they have to do that. No, they could stop this tomorrow, but they are choosing not to, because every day thousands of people pour over the border, and that is their intent.
You know, let's go back over and talk about again these people that are coming across the border. And this is not xenophobia. This is socioeconomics. You know, I'm gonna move from immigration because it's related, but I want to talk about socioeconomics. If you intend to be a first world country, if you intend to be a country that spouts technological advancements, right? The sciences, making things happen, industry, making things work, building things, producing things, selling those things nationally and internationally, you have to have a competent, skilled workforce. You got to have that. And when you bring people in mass by the millions into your country that have language problems, that have problems where they're estranged from their own culture, which are two issues that obstruct assimilation into the United States, where you have people that commit a predicate crime coming into the United States illegally and do not go through the process, the lawful immigration process, where they're basically spitting in your face about your laws. They will not obey your laws. The next thing is, when you have no education or extremely low education, and you either have menial job skills or no job skills, you create an economic stressor to the nation where we can't move forward, because there is no way that these people are going to do anything more, the vast majority of them, than the most menial skills available, right? And the most menial jobs available. You cannot run a first world nation on that base. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I agree. And then when you have them doing the most menial jobs available and they don't get paid a lot of money for doing it, then that's going to create, barrios and places where they're very, very low income. And then the government's going to step in and say, hey, we need to help these people and give them housing and welfare and medical. And you and I and all other Americans end up paying for that. Look at New York City, who's handing them money.
$15,000 a person.
And, you know, I also want to mention that, when Buttigieg was, when he was mayor, he signed an order that allowed these kind of bogus ID cards. They gave ID cards to all the illegal aliens in his city. And then he signed an order and said to the police that they have to use that as valid identification. And they were not citizens and they were illegal, but that's what he did. He sort of made his own rule. And actually he is being sued by Judicial Watch at this point in time for that. He has refused to give over the records. And now he's agreed to, well, I'll look at my own emails and see if I can find anything about this. That's what he's doing.
Well, you know, even before Buttigieg, Linda, and you and I are both escapees from California. Do you remember what happened in California? Because there's millions and millions of illegal aliens in the state of California. And yet they didn't have any ID, and they would use predominantly from Mexico, and they would use a ID card from Mexico called the Matricular de Consular card. Well, that was seen by law enforcement as not being a valid ID. So what did the governor, at that time it was Governor Brown. So what did Governor Brown do? He created a California ID card. It looked just like a driver's license, but it said it's a California ID card. So then that became a government ID card for illegal aliens. So then what did that do with regards to state and national security with regards to traveling? Well, once the TSA realized that our governor in California was giving illegal aliens without any vetting process whatsoever identification cards, they changed the ID card system in California. Now, thank God we were gone by that. But now it's called Real ID. So now you got the ID card, then you got the Real ID card, then you got the California driver's license. You want to talk about confusion national and international travel, that right there is the definition of confusion.
Well, you know, something funny about the Real ID card in California is if you're illegal, you can get it. However, I have a really good friend whose name is Charles Daniel, but has gone his entire life by the name Dan. And he cannot get a Real ID card because his birth certificate says Charles Daniel, but his social security says Daniel. So he cannot get this Real ID. He still has his old driver's license because of that. But if you're illegal, no problemo.
And you know, then people have to remember that whatever government ID card you have, unless otherwise stated on the ID card, that's your access entry to get a firearm in the United States.
Yep.
Okay, so that's how illegal aliens, one of the ways that illegal aliens end up with firearms when they're not allowed to have firearms, they manage to get themselves a Real ID card, and then they present the Real ID card to the gun shop when they lawfully, well, it's actually unlawfully because you can't own a firearm if you're an illegal alien in the United States. But I think you get my point, right? Look at the conundrum that creates.
Well, I have a solution. I think that since, as long as they're busing these people to different places, I think that every person that comes over that border should be bused to Washington, D.C. and dropped off there and let them deal with it because they're the one causing this problem. And one more comment about this, you know, you see the pictures of these places where they're holding the immigrants from California to Arizona to New Mexico to Texas, and they are absolutely wall-to-wall people, I mean, sleeping, touching each other with
the
silver blankets.
Yeah.
And the hypocrisy of nothing being said on the left about this is overwhelming because what they did for over a year, well over a year, to President Trump with complaining about, you know, his people that were coming over the border and how terribly they were treated and, you know, just the false narrative that they had about how the people were being treated and separating kids and all those things. And we've pointed out many times, in any holding place that you go, you don't get to keep your kids. So this is just hypocrisy to look at the worst by far situation that is occurring on our border to the people coming over the border, not only to those people, but also to our own citizens, and saying nothing about it.
Well, so let's talk about the walk back. You know, we mentioned it at the beginning of our conversation with Kamala Harris. So she was made, and I absolutely agree with you. I think she got hit in the face with that. I don't think she saw that coming. But anyway, that's just speculation. But talking about what she was supposed to do, or how they presented her as the czar, the border czar, and she was going to get down to the border and she was going to, you know, figure out what the hell's going on. And then they walk that back because she doesn't go to the border. Okay, so this entire time, she's never gone to the border one single time. Although she's gone to Chicago and bought pastries, she's gone out to Los Angeles to so-called check on COVID and vaccinations and things like that. She hasn't gone down to the most pressing, you know, problem and area in the United States, and that's border security, and especially in the states of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. But, you know, that being said, what she really needs to do when she's trying to figure out how and why people are coming into the United States by the tens of thousands is, one of the things that might help, Kamala, is that we are offering them everything. Okay, we are offering them amnesty. We are offering them free hotels. We are paying money to them. We are giving them EBT cards, so to speak. We are giving them plane tickets. We are giving them bus rides. We are
medical.
And like you said, medical, and for their children. I mean, everything is taken care of. And like you said, Linda, at least one state in the United States, New York, is giving each one $15,000. Who is not going to come across the border for all of that? And what you've done by doing that is create not only a real sense of entitlement, right? Because you're giving them something for free, far beyond what they had in their own country. But now you've inculcated two things. Number one, they can break whatever laws they want because they already broke a law coming in the United States. They can spit in the face of immigration and our immigration laws. And now, once they're in the United States, what are you going to do? You're going to cut them off from all those entitlements? No, you're going to ensure that they continue to receive those type of entitlements. And let me say this. When Joe Biden says that he is not going to increase taxes to the middle class, ladies and gentlemen, in the middle class, you are paying for every single bit of that. I call that a hidden tax.
Well, there's so much more to tax we could talk about, because the middle class is absolutely being taxed in the way of higher prices on lumber, higher prices on gasoline, higher building prices, higher home prices, higher utility prices, higher retail item prices. I mean, no, they're getting hit very hard already.
And you know, being in Texas, and that's really, I mean, we know this has been happening over the years, but you know, we recently had some friends come out to Texas and they escaped from California to Texas, and they're out there looking for homes. And they're having a heck of a time trying to find a home within their price range, because there are so many people escaping California
and Chicago
and these places of oppression,
yes,
of the American citizen, and they're middle class people, and they're retired people, and they are families with small children that are seeking a fair education program where you're not getting hit with 1619 revisionist history or critical race theory or something like that. They're coming out here to Texas by the thousands, and our home prices are starting to skyrocket in the good areas of Texas like we have never seen before.
Well, and you combine that again, you know, with the lumber increases and things that have happened. So it's a real problem, because what's happening is the people from Illinois, from Chicago area, and from California that are coming to Texas, they have cash money. They've sold their houses at high prices and they have money, and they're coming into a place where the house prices are lower, and they are buying up everything. And the people in Texas that need to move to a certain place, they can't even buy anymore.
Well, because they're cash offers.
Yeah, they're against the cash offer. So a home will have, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 offers. And out of those, maybe 3 will be cash. And people are just, they're just left out, and they can't even find a place to go. So it's a real problem in Texas. And You know, the same thing's happening in Florida because the people from New York and some of the other oppressive states, they go to Florida.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's going to be a problem. And we are inundated with the people from California and Chicago, and we are inundated with the people coming up from Central America, right? Mexico. All of those countries, yeah. Because it's not Mexico even primarily now. Guatemala has a big presence. So it's a problem for us.
Well, how about our first cup of coffee?
I'm ready.
AmericaOutloud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, co-host of Talking While Married. If you enjoy a good fiction detective thriller series with accurate true-life investigative techniques and a contemporary Western theme, I hope that you'll try out my new series, Wade Justice, Texas Ranger. The first two books of a multi-book series are already out to great reviews, Absolute Justice and Justice for All. Join retired Texas Ranger Wade Justice as he hunts down a serial killer in Nashville in Absolute Justice, and then follow him through the dark streets of Florence, Italy, as he tracks international terrorists who are plotting to kill the Italian president and murder thousands of Italians in the fast-paced and exciting sequel, Justice for All. My Wade Justice series is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and on Apple, with personalized and autographed books available on our special website, wadejustice.com. That's WADEJUSTUS.com. Get your copies today.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference.
We just had the Oscar Awards, the Academy Awards, and I guess it was a big flop. I didn't watch it. I have boycotted that for many years just because of the political speech that the actors and actresses do. I don't respect it. Just act. That's all I want to see. I don't want to hear what you have to say about your politics. But either way, I guess that it was not very widely watched. But what I did hear and what I did read is that they had a couple of things that bothered me. One was that during the ceremonies, they really badmouthed the police. And I don't appreciate that, and they're wrong and they don't know what they're talking about. And I wonder how many of those people had their own security and how many police were there guarding their precious event. And secondly, in that area where they had the Academy Awards, they have a lot of homeless people. And the city required the homeless people to get up and move before the Academy Awards, or they would destroy all their stuff and clean it up. Other than that, they're there all the time. But when you're going to have these fancy actors and actresses coming up a red carpet, they don't want to see the homeless people, so they told them to move. My question, Ron, and this really bothers me, what about the people that live there day in and day out, 365 days a year that have to deal with that?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. So there were some different dynamics with this year's Academy Awards, and like you, I didn't watch it, but I was really interested in the articles on the workup to the Oscar and also post articles after the Academy Awards had been held. And they were fairly uniform in their chastising these, rich, elite celebrity oligarchs that are out there, these directors, these producers, these actors that are making tens and millions of dollars from these films. And so, as you said, they changed the location. So where do they change the location to? Well, normally they're right down there on Hollywood Boulevard at the Grumman Theater, right? And where they held it this time is at the Union Station, which is the train station in Los Angeles. And so that's a well-known homeless area. So like you said, they had to tell all these homeless people that sleep there every day. I mean, the Miramar City in Los Angeles didn't have any problems with, hundreds, if not thousands of homeless people in tents and cardboard boxes or without any of that stuff, sleeping, urinating, defecating, trashing those areas, worse than Skid Row. Didn't have any problem with them then. But of course, 3 days out, they're sending in the police. They're sending in
the poop scoopers.
The poop scoopers, maintenance, city. What do you call it? City Works.
Yeah.
Those people to come in and to move those people out of there, and then they had to do the major hose down because the
yes.
Like God, the place stinks to high heaven. And then what they did is they offered them vouchers to go to hotels. Right.
Well,
so they don't even do
them.
That. Right. I mean, it's just, but just temporarily, just for the Oscars. So you want to talk about the hypocrisy of that. Then what they had to do is infuse the area with scores of LAPD officers. And also they hired every single private security and executive protection company in Southern California to come up and guard the area and also provide personal security for the individual, actors, directors, producers, all of that, okay? To put on this show, and that's what it is. Don't forget, they're actors where, what did they do? The more hypocrisy is they put down the very people that are out there providing the security for them to put down the cops.
I know, absolutely. The hypocrisy of these people, and there have been some court rulings. I don't know if it's happened in California. I kind of think it did, but I for sure know it's happened up in Washington or Oregon, where judges have ruled that these little dwellings that people are in, their cardboard box or their tent, is their domicile. It's their home. So can they move me out of my home to have Hollywood come in and do something near my house? I mean, that's what they did to these people. Now, I don't agree with the court ruling. I don't agree that it's a home at all.
Yeah, and that's up in King County, Kings County, up in Seattle. That was the female judge that made that ruling.
I do remember that. But then California, they ratified it by doing something as well, especially up in the Silicon Valley area. But anyway, either way, the hypocrisy of letting the people who travel through Union Station have to deal with that day in and day out. The people that live in the area, the kids that walk to school, have to deal with that day in and day out. And then just for show, for Hollywood, they clean it up. And now it's coming right back.
Well, Hollywood is all fantasy. It's all smoke and mirrors. They're all actors. I mean, it's a fake reality. It's a fake society. And to me, I never pay attention to anything any of these actors or directors or producers say, because, they are really in the bubble. They live in gated communities. They live in compounds, 24/7 security. I mean, they know nothing about what the real world is like. But, I thought the guy that wrote the best article, and I tell you what, I'm a big fan of Piers Morgan. Okay, the Brit.
Yes.
Brit.
He speaks pretty plainly, and he doesn't mince his words too much, which I like.
And I actually, since he's been canceled, and this is what I like about people that are canceled, people that are canceled by the woke culture, my antenna go up and I want to pay more attention to them. As a person that was canceled, my book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, was canceled by Amazon. that book has gone through the roof after it's been canceled. So I look at people like Piers Morgan and I say, well, man, this guy got canceled. Perhaps he had something important to say, politically incorrect. And I've been reading his articles. I've been watching his interviews and the guy is right on point. And here's a couple of things. And we didn't get to, we haven't seen a movie in how long, Lynn? A couple of years?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been to the movie theaters, of course, COVID and all that. But even before that, we weren't seeing any movies that resonated with us. You know, the storylines, the actors in all of that. We're not seeing anything that resonated. And here's what Piers Morgan said. It was interesting because he really didn't recognize any of the movies that were getting awards and the actors, our new upcoming actors, there weren't any of the big, well, I mean, there was a couple, but there was usually, there's a plethora of well-known actors, you know, the Denzel Washingtons, the, you know, all the Ron Howards, the, you know, all of these, you know, people that are out there. And he said, you just really didn't see it. And the people that came up and were getting awards and were talking very negatively about the police and really spouting a lot of false rhetoric about officer-involved shootings and police-involved death cases, he didn't really recognize any of those people. So why, where's the resonance in us watching them or listening to them?
Well, I don't want to, but I just always am stunned at the hypocrisy of people who are saying things against the police, yet who use the police every day to protect themselves. And I wish that the cops would say no to those kinds of jobs, because most of those jobs are side pay jobs. They're not always, but sometimes they are. And they just need to say no.
Well, you know, I'm glad you kind of made that twist in the road there for a second, because us being involved in law enforcement in our former lives, we're very supportive of law enforcement and the thin blue line. But one of the biggest, and I'm going to speak personally, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. I think law enforcement shoots themselves in the foot on a regular basis, especially the line officers. And I know they're scared about, you know, being sanctioned by their departments or something, but man, you know, you have off duty time and you have family and friends and supporters of law enforcement and the thin blue line. You have to speak up. Or you will be canceled permanently. And then what will we have? You've got to speak up. Here's a great example. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, recently, because of all the demonstrations and the lack of support by the mayor and the city council, the 12 members of their riot squad resigned their positions, not as police officers, but their assignments, their voluntary assignments, being in the tactical squad, the riot squad, because of the lack of support by the city administration. I'm a radical with stuff like that. If we're getting killed, if we're getting injured, we don't mind taking risks, but not unnecessary risks. And no matter what you do now, you're going to get criticized. They're taking away qualified immunity. They're taking away our ability to act in an objectively reasonable manner and be protected by litigation and prosecution if we do the right thing. We're getting prosecuted. We're getting sued. We're losing everything. It's increasing suicides, divorce rates. It's horrible. We need to walk off the job in mass and make a statement. We need to pick a day or days where we just, and I know, I'm sorry, it goes against everything I believe
in. It does, yeah.
But we need to do that in law enforcement.
You know, back in the day when we had the blue flus, I mean, so many officers would not participate because they are good people, because they are ethical people, because they care about the communities in which they work. But what's happening right now to police officers is so wrong. And now we have the Justice Department under Biden, who is starting to investigate department after department, and the departments, they cannot defend themselves against the giant government. These are small departments. Even a big department is a small department compared to the federal government. And they no matter what, they're going to be accused of something. And, you know, it's the man on the street, the woman on the street, the people that that really are down in the trenches, that unless you have done that, unless you have been there and done that and been in those situations, these backseat drivers make me nuts. They don't know what they're talking about. They need to get in a police car and they need to understand what the job is. And, you know, it's very frustrating to see what's going on. And I agree with you at this point that we have to have officers speak up for themselves.
Here's where I draw the line. Everything you said, I agree with 100%. But here's where I draw the line. We are there for the community in law enforcement.
Yes.
We're there for them. And heretofore, that's why officers, because of their oath of office and their care for the community to keep it safe and secure, albeit they take tremendous risks. But here's where I draw the line as a police officer. Retired now, but here's where I draw the line. And here's where I'm suggesting that my brothers and sisters in the thin blue line draw the line. When they abandon you, when they don't care about you, that's where I suggest you draw the line and teach them a lesson. And you right now, law enforcement, you men and women in law enforcement, you brave brothers and sisters, you're in the catbird seat right now. Because if you demonstrate your disgust with this and your demands for change and you walk off the job en masse, they are not going to fire you because they can't replace you.
Yeah, that's absolutely
true. Imagine what it would be like. Hypothetically, Linda, imagine if we had a 1,000-man department and in protest, 1,000 people walk off the job for a day. They're not going to fire them. And how can they replace 1,000-man police department? How can they suspend 1,000-man police department? Even a department with 50 officers that walked off the job, how long would it take them to replace even 10 of you? A fifth of your force, how long would it take? It takes a year to go through the vetting process and to go through the police academy and to go through the field training program to get somebody on solo beat patrol.
Who's not even experienced at that point.
Exactly.
Doesn't have the length and the breadth of experience that the people that are on the departments now have. Here's a perfect example. Look at New York. New York City with their mayor has lost so many officers. They took early retirement. They left. They moved to different areas.
Taking medical disabilities.
And now you see the murder rates and the crime rates skyrocketing against the people in New York. The people in New York don't want this.
Let me talk about two specific cities. One that I used to be the expert in, that's Portland, Oregon, and then going just a bit north to Seattle, Washington. You guys have got to get radical. Especially you in Portland, you have got to get radical. They are already having policing problems there. Guys are already leaving the job, like you said, Linda, and they're leaving in droves. You need to wake the hell up. Your police officer association president has got to get his head out of his rear end. And you guys need and gals need to walk off that job en masse. Ted Wheeler, right now, things are so chaotic in Portland that Wheeler doesn't know what the hell to do. And he's pleading for people to help create, you know, stop and identify these Antifa members and Black Lives Matters and these radicals. Seattle, it's the same thing. Use the force of your position, get radical and make this stop.
I would also say that the people that live in those areas need to do the same thing. They need to really speak up and make this stop. And Ted Wheeler had every opportunity when President Trump tried to send in the National Guard and he refused them. He did nothing. And I mean, for a city to be in the chaos that these two cities, Portland and Seattle, have been in for well over a year is absolutely just inexcusable and poor management. And the police officers there, honestly, I don't even know why they're still working in those cities. In Seattle, in addition, you have the school district who owns property where the school's located, the grammar school for the children, and they have allowed homeless encampments to be on their property. And according to the city, because the city doesn't own the property, the school district does, which I don't honestly know what the difference is. It's all city stuff. It's all stuff we pay taxes for. They have allowed this homeless encampment. So the children either have to go completely around or they have to walk by all these homeless people with their drugs and their feces and their perversions and all of these, you know, things that comes with homeless encampments, endangering the children, and they will do nothing about it. So you have a school district, people, you pay your taxes for that school district, for the properties that they buy are not privately owned. They are owned by the school district, which is taxpayer funded. And they are allowing homeless encampments so that your children have to walk by there every day. And the teachers themselves are afraid of it. But the city will do nothing in Seattle. I mean, these two cities are the most mismanaged cities I have ever seen. And, you know, to be a police officer in either city, God bless you. I don't know why you do it. And, you know, I'm somebody that can't be more in favor and pro law enforcement. I think that 99.9% of these people walk on water. And for us to abuse them the way that we are doing in courts and by taking away their qualified immunity, and are completely ignorant legislators making these rules, it's just despicable. We as a society need to stand up and support our law enforcement.
Going back to Portland, going back to Seattle, and talking about all these, you know, New York City, you know, Boston, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Chicago, Detroit, all of these areas that are seeing such increases in crime and shootings and murders, out of control riots, protests, and everything. This will not stop. This will not stop. The only people that can stop it are the thin blue line, the protectors and the enforcers of the rule of law. We can't stop it in law enforcement because of the way that law enforcement is managed, unless mayors and city council people create the change that allows that supports the thin blue line and allows the men and women in law enforcement to come in and retake control of our municipalities.
And here's how we change it. We vote for people that are pro-law enforcement, and we put them in office, and you will see this stop. You don't see this happening, Ron, in Republican cities and states. You don't see it because they are pro-law enforcement. That should tell everybody in America everything that they need to know. Put people in that will stop this, not people that perpetuate it. Portland voted for Ted Wheeler again. So, I mean, they're getting exactly what they asked for.
Well, you know, the reason that they voted for Ted Wheeler is they couldn't find anybody better to replace him, because the city is such a cesspool with such violence. And now, you know, outside people that would be good leaders look at the problems as being insurmountable, right? Because it's not only Wheeler. They've got that city council member and that fire commissioner that wanted to be the police commissioner, Hardesty, and she's a train wreck. So it isn't just Wheeler. It's systemic in that city's management of the city council and things. So, you know, and I hearken back to, you know, 10 years ago when I first started, you know, doing expert work for the city of Portland, and I really enjoyed it. Portland in those days was a beautiful city. I mean, it was fun.
I've been there many times.
You know,
it was
Columbia
beautiful.
River,
yes,
there,
yes.
And the coffee shops and the pastry shops and the restaurants downtown and the shade trees, just a fun little city to come and visit. My God, I would have to go there armed if I was going to. I would never go back to that city. You know, and so look at the businesses that have left. Look at the people that are hostages in that downtown Portland. But like you said, Linda, they keep returning people like Ted Wheeler and Hardesty and these ultra-liberal leftist city council people in office, and the city cannot survive.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd want to do that. Hey, I want to talk for just a second about
masks.
Oh, we're all wearing them. Not so much in Texas.
Not me.
But MIT just came out with a study that said that for indoor dining or indoor anything, it doesn't really matter if you're 6 or 60 feet away. The mask is not going to really make a big difference.
Yeah. Can I say something disgusting and quote you?
Oh.
quote you for a minute?
It's disgusting.
Okay. So Dr. Linda, okay, famed mask researcher, said that if you're wearing your mask and you can smell somebody passing gas who is doing that through underwear and a pair of pants and 2 sheets of your mask, that mask ain't working.
That's right. But, well, you know, that, I didn't make that up. Somebody else did.
But I just want to say something. I mean, let's use some common sense here. Okay. First of all, the coronavirus particulates can go right
they're
through the mask.
They're smaller than the fibers in the mask.
The pores in the mask.
Yeah.
Okay, so they can get through. The next thing is, if you're vaccinated, what the hell do you care, right? Because you're vaccinated. And if you look at the efficacy rate of the vaccination, and we did the Pfizer vaccinations, you should be good, all right? The next thing is, don't forget what CO2 is. That breath that comes out of your body, it's referred to as CO2. CO2 is a waste product. And especially, you know, if you've got stomach problems, you burp, you belch, you have all those toxic chemicals from your food that you ate, and now you're belching and burping and putting it out through that mask, you're rebreathing all of that. This is Dr. Ron. Non-diagnostic, not an MD, a PhD, but here's what I'm...
But common sense.
Here's what I think is going to happen in the future. I think our children, moving forward years from now, are going to start having respiratory problems. We might see a tremendous increase in asthma nationwide, but certain types of respiratory problems. I think adults, I think especially those that are senior citizens, those that have comorbidities, years from now, after this, we'll probably always have COVID or some strain of COVID. I think we're going to see some serious problems going into the future. And I blame Dr. Fauci and a lot of these people for a lot of the problems that I think that we're having now and we're going to have moving into the future.
Yep. I think we need to get rid of the masks.
Well, Linda, what an interesting discussion this evening.
As usual.
And we'll see you all back on the radio.